Welcome to the KMUD News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. In this episode, we have a large number of local updates, along with stories on a proposed development fee in Arcata and from our broadcast partners. This is KMUD News. Starting off in Southern Humboldt. Possibly related to the cannabis enforcement helicopter operations this week, the Humboldt County Sheriff's Department's Marijuana Enforcement Team, in coordination with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, led a large enforcement convoy this morning, July 16th. According to reporting by Redheaded Black Belt, the convoy was spotted traveling along Alder Point Road, one of the areas targeted multiple times in recent days by helicopter enforcement activity. A witness at the scene spotted four CDFW vehicles, along with multiple unmarked vehicles likely belonging to the Humboldt Sheriff's Department. The exact location on Alder Point Road the convoy was headed is unknown. KMUD News is in contact with Sheriff Hansel, who is currently in Virginia lobbying against moving cannabis from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3. We'll be following up with the sheriff on this recent ramped-up cannabis enforcement activity and look forward to engaging with him further on the issue. From Caltrans District 1. California Transportation Commission recently approved funding for more than 150 new projects that will improve safety on the state highway system and strengthen infrastructure resiliency. The investments align with Governor Gavin Newsom's Build More, Faster agenda, delivering critical infrastructure upgrades and creating thousands of jobs across the state. Of the combined total, nearly $547 million is from the Federal Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act of 2021, and another $736 million from California's Senate Bill 1, the Road Repair and Accountability Act of 2017. The remaining $1.1 billion is funded through the state highway account, the general fund, and other state and federal programs. Projects approved in District 1 include approximately $6.8 million in supplemental funding towards the Last Chance Grade Project on US 101 south of Crescent City in Del Norte County, approximately $2 million towards lighting, guardrail, and pedestrian safety improvements on Route 53 in Lake County from the Anderson Ranch Parkway to 40th Avenue in Clear Lake, approximately $1.8 million in SB 1 funding for road and drainage upgrades and pedestrian and bicycle infrastructure on Route 99 in Humboldt County, near Willow Creek from Titlow Hill Road to the Trinity County line, approximately $1.5 million toward guardrail and drainage upgrades on US 101 near Hopland in Mendocino County, approximately $600,000 in SB 1 funding towards revegetation and erosion control improvements on Route 99 from Cedar Creek to the East Fork Willow Creek Bridge in Humboldt County, and finally, approximately $1.3 million in SB 1 funding for emergency allocations towards road repairs and drainage upgrades on Route 200 North Bank Road near McKinleyville in Humboldt County. Next, a feather alert. A feather alert has been issued for Victoria Ladd of the Washoe Tribe. Victoria was last seen on June 10th at approximately 9 p.m. She is believed to be on foot. Victoria Ladd is 31 years old, approximately 5 feet 4 inches tall, 210 pounds, with black hair, brown eyes, and was last seen wearing a multicolored dress. Anyone with knowledge of her whereabouts is encouraged to call 911. From Redwood National and State Parks. The National Park Service has selected Jacob Olson as the next superintendent of Redwood National and State Parks. He will assume the role in mid-August 2026. Olson most recently served as superintendent of Glen Canyon National Recreation Area and Rainbow Bridge National Monument in Arizona and Utah. He brings more than 20 years of National Park Service experience leading complex park operations, building strong partnerships, and stewarding some of the nation's most significant public lands. Olson also served as vice mayor of Gustavus, Alaska, and worked as a firefighter, incident commander, and emergency trauma technician. He and his wife Bree, who were both raised in the coastal rainforests of Southeast Alaska, are excited to become part of California's North Coast community. From the Rural County Representatives of California, or RCRC for short, the Rural County Representatives of California has taken legal action to protect reliable communication service for rural Californians by filing a motion to intervene in AT&T's federal lawsuit against the California Public Utilities Commission and the California Attorney General. RCRC conducted this filing in partnership with the Utility Reform Network, the California State Association of Counties, and the Communications Workers of America. AT&T's lawsuit seeks to eliminate California's carrier of last resort requirements, longstanding obligations that ensure residents have access to basic telephone service regardless of where they live. RCRC and its partners previously filed a brief supporting the CPUC and Attorney General and are now seeking formal party status in the case to ensure the interests of California residents and communities are fully represented before a final decision is reached. The motion emphasizes the importance of preserving universal service and ensuring that any replacement technology provides the same or better reliability, functionality, and service quality as the existing landline network. It also raises concerns about limiting California's authority to enforce consumer protection and public safety standards, particularly in rural and underserved areas where wireless alternatives remain unreliable or unavailable. The Rural County Representatives of California is a 40-member county service organization that champions policies on behalf of California's rural counties. RCRC is dedicated to representing the collective unique interests of its membership, providing legislative and regulatory representation at the state and federal levels, and providing responsible services for its members to enhance and protect the quality of life in rural California counties. Next, from the U.S. Forest Service in Mendocino. Please be advised there is no water available at Letts Lake Campground. There is water available in the Fouts area. The Forest Service apologizes for the inconvenience, and staff are working to resolve the issue as soon as possible. From the California Department of Justice. California Attorney General Rob Bonta today joined a coalition of 19 attorneys general in moving to intervene in Renewables Northwest et al. V. Hegseth et al., a lawsuit brought by several wind industry associations and businesses against the U.S. Department of Defense and Secretary Pete Hegseth for unlawfully freezing routine reviews of land-based wind energy projects across the country. Federal law requires the DOD to review proposed wind projects for potential national security concerns and work with developers to address any issues. In August of 2025, the Department of Defense stopped moving projects through this process, blocking onshore wind energy development nationwide. Attorney General Bonta and the coalition today filed a motion to intervene in the lawsuit against the DOD and filed a complaint in intervention, asking the court to set aside DOD's unlawful freeze and order the agency to resume the review process required by federal law. Under federal law, land-based wind project developers must submit any proposed projects with wind turbines over 200 feet tall to the Federal Aviation Administration for review. The FAA then refers these projects to the DOD to assess whether they could affect national security interests, such as military operations, radar systems, or flight paths. For more than a decade, DOD engaged in a predictable review process and worked with developers to mitigate potential concerns. Mitigation measures often included changes to turbine placement or height, radar upgrades, or agreements to pause generation under certain circumstances. In August of 2025, DOD abruptly stopped following its review process. Officials ceased countersigning mitigation agreements, stopped sending completed agreements to developers for signatures, and delayed or completely halted communications with developers about mitigation. As a result, wind projects across the country have been frozen at various stages of the review process, including those projects that had already completed mitigation negotiations and were only awaiting final DOD approval. In May of 2026, the DOD issued interim guidance stating that wind energy projects would continue to be subject to an indefinite hold while the Department of Defense conducts further agency coordination. Demand for electricity continues to increase across the nation. Wind project development is key to meeting this demand by creating additional supply while also increasing reliability, lowering energy costs, and reducing the harmful emissions associated with other sources of power generation. The DOD's unlawful wind freeze impacts the state's ability to provide clean and affordable energy, which is a critical component of our nation's energy security. Specifically in California, at least one onshore wind project is being held up by the wind freeze, threatening private investment and construction jobs. In today's filing, the coalition argues that the DOD's freeze is unlawful and violates the Administrative Procedure Act because it is arbitrary and capricious. DOD has not provided a reasonable explanation for its sudden change in policy, accounted for the harm to states, developers, workers, and ratepayers, or considered the major investments made in reliance on its long-standing review process. The coalition also argues that DOD's refusal to act is causing unreasonable delay and undermining Congress's directive that the Department of Defense balance national security concerns with the responsible development of renewable energy. The coalition is asking the court to require the agency to resume reviewing and approving land-based wind projects. And next, our main stories. This is KMUD News. The Arcata City Council heard a proposal for a development fee to benefit the city's fire district, KMUD News reports. The Arcata Fire District is looking for new sources of funding. One proposal presented at yesterday's July 15th Arcata City Council meeting was for a development fee to help fund Arcata's fire district. The argument being made is that Arcata's current population necessitates further funding the fire district to maintain and expand current services. Chief Chris Emmons introduced the proposal, and consultant Blair Ayes from the consulting firm SCI. Essentially, the fee would charge property developers per square foot, meaning larger projects would pay a higher development fee that would fund the Arcata Fire District. Here's some selected audio from the presentation, starting with the introduction of Arcata Fire Chief Chris Emmons and consultant Blair Ayes.
So item A is to receive a presentation from Arcata Fire District staff and consultants regarding the district's development impact fee study.
Good evening, Vice Mayor and Council. Thanks for letting us have some time tonight to present to you about our development impact fee project we've been working on. Our consultant, Blair Oz, should be there in person. Unfortunately, I'm not able to be there tonight. So as you guys know, we are an independent special district, and we have very few funding mechanisms that fund our district. With that, there are a few mechanisms such as development impact fees that would allow us to bring in funding on new development.
Consultant Blair Ayes of SCI Consulting then gave his remarks on the proposed development fee for the Arcata Fire District.
Thank you, Chief, and good evening, Vice Mayor and Council members. Again, my name is Blair Oz. I'm with SCI Consulting Group. I'm a Vice President and a 24-year impact fee practitioner, and I've been retained by the district to prepare this fee program for you and for them, and present it to you in the county, hopefully for adoption. Development impact fees are one-time fees that are paid by new development to fund the construction of new infrastructure. So essentially, it's quite important that a growing community, the question usually arises of if we're growing, we need to also grow the infrastructure of the community. So as we grow, we're going to need more roads and schools and fire stations and parks, and so the question is, as you grow, who should be responsible for that growth? And so these fees are very common across the state, and really are the premise behind them is that growth should pay its own way, and that the other funding that the district receives often is just not enough to be able to meet that level of costs that are needed to expand the fire system. But the reason that we're here tonight is because the fire district, as a special district, does not have the land use authority to impose these fees on their behalf. They have, of course, as you know, taxing authority, so they can go out with a special tax measure or an assessment measure. They have that authority, but the land use authority is reserved for the city and the county. So they so this fee program has been presented before the district board, and the district board has approved it. And I think you received a resolution requesting that you consider it and hopefully adopt it on their behalf. The purpose behind the fees is to provide funding to expand the fire system to serve the growing service population of the district.
While the proposed development fee for the Arcata Fire District is only in the early stages of being proposed, it is clear the fire district is seeking quite a bit of additional funding to meet current and future needs. Only time will tell if that funding will come via the proposed development fee or other funding methods. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. Senate Democrats block a $1 trillion defense bill as war resumes. KPFA's news director Lauren Schmidt reports.
Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer announced his opposition, and other key Democrats said they could not support the annual bill, known as the National Defense Authorization Act. As the war in Iran has resumed and drags into its fifth month with no clear endgame in sight.
Trump's supposed ceasefire deal has completely collapsed. Our troops are coming under attack. The Strait of Hormuz is a minefield. Gas prices are going back up. And Donald Trump is totally out of his depth.
The Senate vote comes a day after the White House formally notified Congress that it had resumed bombing strikes against Iran, effectively unraveling the fragile ceasefire in the U.S.-Israeli conflict. The renewed fighting has fueled economic uncertainty, including volatile gas prices ahead of the midterm elections, despite bipartisan efforts to limit the president's military authority through a war powers resolution.
Now the White House has formally notified Congress that hostilities have resumed, that American strikes are underway again, and our forces remain positioned for more. Yet Republicans want the Senate to take up the NDAA, the defense bill, as though none of this is happening, as though Congress can debate the nation's central national security bill while ignoring the nation's most urgent national security crisis. We cannot. I will be voting no.
Congress has tried repeatedly to slap guardrails on the administration, voting more than 10 times on various war powers resolutions that would halt hostilities. But those efforts have not succeeded, and most Republicans in the House and the Senate majorities back Trump.
The president is waging an unauthorized war, defining bipartisan majorities in Congress, refusing to level with the American people out the cost, the mission, or the end game. The NDAA cannot become a permission slip for that recklessness that we see occurring in Iran.
Senate Majority Leader John Thune, however, supported the defense package and implored his colleagues to pass it.
What this bill does for the men and women serving our country and their families who serve alongside them. This year's NDAA supports a 3.6% pay raise for our troops, and it invests in a number of quality of life improvements for them and their families. Investments in education, housing, health care, and child care. Mr. President, our colleagues on the Armed Services Committee have put forward a strong bill. A strong bill for our national security and for the men and women who defend our nation.
This year, the 66th annual NDAA is running into a double whammy of opposition, as lawmakers are fuming over Trump's military action against Iran and resisting the White House request to substantially increase Pentagon spending to $1.5 trillion, up from about $900 billion last year.
Republicans are ready to go. The question is, how will Democrats vote today?
they would vote no. The tally was 50 to 46, falling largely along party lines. After the bill failed to advance, Thune switched his vote in a procedural move that will allow the leader to bring it back up for consideration at a later date. The sizable boost of funds aligns with the White House's 2027 budget request, as the Trump administration seeks a generational investment to modernize the Defense Department, which he refers to as the Department of War, under Secretary Pete Hegseth. The White House has also requested $350 billion from Congress under another budget reconciliation progress. But House GOP leaders have indicated that it is likely to be a much smaller amount, more in line with the initial $87 billion the White House requested last month as supplemental funding for Iran. But Republican deficit hawks are skeptical, despite support for the war within their ranks. The extra defense funding comes on top of the additional $150 billion Republicans already provided to the Pentagon last year under Trump's big tax break bill that some say has not been spent or fully accounted for. This comes as government watchdog groups reported last year that the Defense Department spent $2 million on Alaskan king crab and nearly $9 million on lobster tails in September alone. The same month also saw $15 million spent on ribeye steaks. The Senate bill would also block the secretary's travel funds unless he provides reports they have requested, including on a deadly Iran school strike at the start of the war, where 120 children were killed. Democrats, however, are pushing for further limits in line with a war powers resolution that would force the cessation of military actions. Democratic Senator Tammy Duckworth of Illinois, a veteran who flew helicopter combat missions in Iraq, said she would oppose the bill unless it included her amendment to end the war, stating, quote, "Simply throwing more money at an out-of-control military operation is not a strategy. It's a recipe for a forever war," close quote. Meanwhile, House Republicans have unveiled a $95 billion budget plan that would provide billions in additional funding for the U.S. military and the ongoing war with Iran. The budget resolution would direct House committees to draft legislation, providing up to $60 billion for the Armed Services Committee, with additional funding for intelligence programs and agriculture. House Speaker Mike Johnson says the package will strengthen national defense and advance Republican priorities ahead of next year's midterm elections. Notably, the proposal does not include spending cuts or other offsets to pay for the new funding, drawing criticism from Democrats and some fiscal conservatives as annual federal deficits continue to climb. The House Budget Committee is expected to take up the measure Thursday with a floor vote possibly next week. In other news from Capitol Hill, the U.S. House of Representatives voted on an amendment this Wednesday afternoon that was introduced by Kentucky Republican Thomas Massie to eliminate the $3.3 billion in annual U.S. military aid to Israel. The measure was backed by Vermont Independent Senator Bernie Sanders. According to Politico, nearly half of House Democrats voted in favor of cutting the aid, highlighting what the publication described as a significant shift in Democratic support for Israel amid the ongoing war in Gaza and Iran. The amendment, however, ultimately failed, 314 to 104, after receiving strong Republican opposition. East Bay Congresswoman Latifa Simon voted to block the funding, citing concerns that Israel is violating international law. In a statement, she said, quote, "I refuse to support a foreign policy that abandons the institutions we help build, that leads to preventable deaths, and that chooses destruction over diplomacy and peace," close quote. Congressman Jared Huffman, who represents the North Bay, also weighed in. He spoke to KPFA News and shared more about the amendment and the reasoning behind his vote.
Yeah, so this is a bill called State and Foreign Ops, or SFOPs, as the insiders call it. It's one of the 12 appropriations bills that we're supposed to pass every year. And this is a bill that I usually vote against. I vote against most of the defense budget. And I voted against this bill, too. But there was an amendment that would have stripped all funding of any kind involving Israel by Thomas Massey of Kentucky. And it did divide Democrats to some degree because, you know, many of us want to stop funding the military aid, especially the any aid that can be used offensively. We want to condition any aid that does flow to Israel in ways that we haven't in the past. And we want to send a message that all of this off-the-rails stuff that we've seen in Gaza and with settler violence and the West Bank occupation has to stop. And so many of us are very eager to send that message. This bill, this amendment by Tom Massey was so poorly drafted, though, that it would have defunded our embassy personnel, our humanitarian efforts in the region, peace-building nonprofits that work with Palestinians, and funding that is needed by the Palestinian Authority to provide security. So I voted present because there were elements I supported and elements that I think were clearly a bridge too far. But you saw Democrats land in several different places on this vote.
For Pacifica, I'm Lauren Schmidt.
That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Bianna Federico, Michael McCaskill, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. KMUD News is now on streaming platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Are there stories we're missing or that you're curious about? You can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located in the unceded territory, the Sinkyone, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.